This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Welcome to the first day of spring. And pay no attention to old man Winter there behind the curtain. Grab an extra blanket and stick around. We've got lots to review in the next half hour with Our Island Universe and The Spark, plus a review of the effect of pipelines on property values, some trends in higher education in Virginia, and a photographic search for diversity in a divided nation. But first, this. If you've got middle schoolers, chances are you've heard of Minecraft. It's a video game with blocky graphics, a single level, and no storyline. But it's also an obsession for millions of kids and lots of adults, too, who will happily spend hours digging for resources and building houses and fighting off monsters. If that sounds to you like just another on-screen waste of time, WMRA's Emily Richardson Lorente has some good news for you.
Since this is radio and you can't see the Minecraft world I'm walking through, let's just listen for a sec. That's the sound of me fighting a zombie, shooting a few arrows, drinking and eating, and blowing something up. All of those activities are pretty common in Minecraft survival mode, though none are happening here in this class at the moment.
Isabella, do you know who this is? It looks like a big old mansion.
In this classroom at Agnor Heard Elementary School, kids aren't using Minecraft to fight zombies and creepers. They're using a special version of it to recreate great architecture, like the Louvre.
It's an art museum in France.
Oh, in France.
This architecture project is the brainchild of Mia Shand, the resource teacher here at Agnor Heard.
Because it's just such an incredible tool. I love it, and I was slowly fighting to get the license.
I'm trying, yeah, 1 second.
Now that she has it, her school is one of 15 in Albemarle County that are integrating Minecraft into the curriculum. Kids in this class are working on the Golden Gate Bridge, the Empire State Building, and of course, the Louvre. Fourth grader Isabella DiCarlo and her teammates decided to research and reconstruct the Paris Museum, complete with paintings, sculptures, and the iconic glass pyramid that serves as its entrance.
I found out that it had the Mona Lisa in it, so I liked that. And I also liked that it was in France.
How difficult is it to build the Louvre in Minecraft?
Pretty hard, but also not super hard.
Somebody made this?
Yes.
Wait, where's yours?
Mia Shand is using this lesson to teach her students about a variety of subjects, history, geography, art. But other teachers are using Minecraft to teach verb conjugations in Spanish, to stage virtual field trips deep inside microscopic cells, even to recreate the fictional worlds found in the books their kids are reading.
I'm having to edit a pirate ship into a Minecraft world to support a Robinson Crusoe curriculum.
Gene Osborne is Albemarle County's Minecraft guru. Technically, he's a learning technology integrator, but he spends about 30% of his time on Minecraft, training teachers, supporting the network, and helping kids with special projects.
Every week, a new piece of curriculum comes out in Minecraft, and one of my jobs is to make that incredibly easy for a teacher to access.
Before this gig, he taught for 14 years, and he says there's a big difference in how engaged students are when they're using Minecraft.
Our level of engagement just spikes when we're using this platform, whatever it is, whether we're accessing content from a world history curriculum, science, English, I mean, literally all content areas can embed those themes into a Minecraft environment.
But I can't get out of my room.
This is what I love about it, because I think a lot of parents think that once they get onto the screen, that it's going to be silent. And this is anything but silent. This is literally like constant problem solving, arguing, working together. I mean, it's incredible.
There's another reason both kids and teachers like Minecraft, because the line between teacher and student can sometimes blur. In a good way.
Teachers are the ones who are setting the goals and really delivering that instruction to kids. But when a kid can say, oh, let me show you how to do it, that's an awesome moment because it builds esteem, and that's really, that's huge.
Here, but I can get you to mine.
This semester, some Albemarle County teachers are using Minecraft in kindergarten for basic building projects. Others are using it in high school for advanced design work. It would seem that Minecraft is good for just about anyone, right, Mom and Dad? One big caveat, though. The version of Minecraft that Gene Osborne works with is called Minecraft EDU. It's a schools-only version that allows teachers to integrate lesson plans, limit access, and set some ground rules.
1 minute warning!
Unlike the version your kids play at home, this game is monitored closely by a teacher.
I control every single student's computer from my computer. So I have the ability to freeze students individually. I can teleport them to where they need to go. I can change the weather, whether there's fire, TNT, monsters, and then, of course, night and day.
So you control all those features.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You are like the god of Minecraft.
It's very powerful. I have to be careful.
Sandy, could you teleport me? Where are
you? Of course, Mia Shand isn't alone. According to Microsoft, Minecraft EDU is being used in more than 40 countries by more than 5,500 teachers.
Okay, guys, everybody's been frozen. Go ahead and shut down the computers. I will save it.
For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson-Lorente.
In Virginia news this week, a new report from a natural gas trade organization is claiming that having a natural gas pipeline running beneath your property doesn't actually have an impact on property values. Virginia Public Radio's Wes Williams has more.
The Inga Foundation, which works to advance the use of natural gas, commissioned a report to study the impact of pipelines on property values, and they found it had none. But not everybody's convinced. Joanna Salidis is the president of Friends of Nelson, one of the groups fighting the Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
A major problem is that they don't look at properties that really are and are not affected by the pipeline.
Salidis argues that property values all over pipeline regions drop, which is why the study would show no difference in the homes closest to a pipeline. But despite the objections, the Inga Foundation says their numbers are good. Kathy Landry is the director of communications for the Inga Foundation.
We really wanted to know what the effect of pipelines was on property values. And this report finds that there really isn't one, and we stand by that.
While they disagree about this study, both Salidis and Landry said that one group whose voices you can trust on this is the realtors. So if you want the bottom line, go ask your realtor what they think. I'm Wes Williams.
The Chronicle of Higher Education is out with its second annual assessment of trends on campus. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman reports on what the Chronicle found in studying colleges and universities in 2016.
The authors noted a fresh wave of attacks on free speech, especially what students can say in public or on social media. And they saw a growing tendency by governing boards to act without consulting students or faculty. Goldie Blumenstich is a senior writer at the Chronicle and author of American Higher Education in Crisis.
In this public university sector, there's still a lot of concern that the trustees are political appointees and in some cases representing the political interests of the people who appointed them and maybe not so much the best interests of the university.
More schools are using metrics to measure faculty productivity and looking for ways to overhaul the college transcript to better reflect what students are qualified to do.
Even the parents who are thrilled to send their children to a liberal arts college, they all would like to know that at the end of the day, their students will be qualified for jobs.
The report says academic research is getting greater scrutiny as readers look for corporate influence or outright fraud. It sees a growing corporate presence on campus as private companies take over core services like cafeterias, bookstores, even teaching. And it highlights a reliance on better marketing of the universities themselves. I'm Sandy Hausman.
During the current presidential campaign, the nation seems more divided than ever, but a team of photographers from Virginia has set out to show how one community, home to dozens of different ethnic groups, is making diversity work. Sandy Hausman has that story.
Photographer Lloyd Wolfe has lived much of his life near Columbia Pike, a road that's linked northern Virginia to Washington, D.C. since 1810. For the last 75 years, he says, it's been a magnet for immigrants.
There's something like 108 languages in the high schools here. And the thing that I think is interesting is that they're not in ethnic enclaves. Everybody's kind of mixed up. There's some apartment buildings you go in, and it's like the United Nations. You know, the experiences of diversity is something we see as an asset, not as an issue.
Ethnic festivals offer a constant feast for the eyes, so Wolf and his colleague Paula Endo got a grant from the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities to document 5 miles of Columbia Pike in photographs. As a Japanese-American, Endo and her family were sent to an internment camp during the Second World War, and Wolf's dad escaped from Nazi Germany. Both are concerned about the hate speech they're hearing in America this year. By contrast, they celebrate what they've seen along Columbia Pike in their new book, Living Diversity. I'm Sandy Hausman.
I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wish I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. Claudia's hand-painted yarn is a small Harrisonburg company whose website proudly proclaims it is owned by a woman, operated by women, staffed by women. We dye by hand, the website continues, all of the yarns we sell. Be warned, they are dyed with peace, love, comfort, and joy. May they be yours. It was my pleasure recently to talk with Claudia McLean, who is the Claudia of Claudia's hand-painted yarns. Where did this business come from?
16 years ago, I quit drinking and I couldn't sit still and I started knitting. My mother had taught me to knit right-handed when I was a little girl, and then I quit. And when I started again, I started knitting left-handed. You know, I was a left-handed person. And when I went back to it, I realized that I really was a left-handed knitter. And then there's a wonderful book out called Knitting for Anarchists, which kind of told me, whatever you do is fine as long as the end result is the end result. And we had this wonderful shop up in McLean in Northern Virginia where I lived. And I just kind of moved in there.
What were you doing for a living back then when you were transforming yourself into a sober left-handed knitter?
So my training by trade is a CPA and a stockbroker. And there came a day when I realized that doesn't matter how good you are at something that pays incredibly well, I just needed to do something that was more creative. I had been through a bout of breast cancer, and that's just a very reflective time. I realized that what I had been doing with all my life was saying, when this happens, then I'll be happy. When I have ownership of this thing, then I'll be happy. And I suddenly realized that none of that stuff was making me happy, or it was for about 10 seconds. But what I really wanted to do was something creative. A girlfriend had asked me at coffee, if you could do anything and have anything, what would you do? And I said, well, I would want to have a yarn company. And she said, well, what's the first thing you need to do? And I said, well, I need to get a business license. She says, great, go do it. And I went home that day and I got online and I got a business license.
For Claudia's hand-painted yarns?
Well, I don't even know what it was for. It's been a while. That was like 2003.
Okay.
And so there was this progression
of things. Now, wait a minute, back up. You wanted a yarn company. What did you know about yarn and dyeing yarn? And
absolutely nothing. I just knew that I was a manic knitter. And they never had the yarn that I wanted and the color that I wanted or the project that I wanted.
And what was missing in terms of yarns and colors?
Who knows? You know, I'm one of those people who I would envision a project in my head and then I would go into the yarn shop to find the materials to produce this project. And it wasn't a project that anybody else had decided to do. And so it wasn't there. You know, I wanted, I don't know, let's just say a purple sweater, and they didn't have the right shade of purple. I think that the way I transition the colors is maybe unique or different or something.
Well, you've got a skein here, and describe it and talk about what you mean by transitions.
So
please.
We have this huge hank of yarn that weighs about a pound, and we'll turn it into 12 smaller pieces when we're done with it. But starting out, I've got these huge pots that hold 6 gallons of water, and I've got a big pipe in the middle of them, so they look like an enormous angel food cake pan. And so the first color goes up at the 12 o'clock position, and in this case, it's a rich chocolatey brown. And next to that is this beautiful dusty rose, and then down at the 5 o'clock position is kind of a burnt orange color. And then the next color over is kind of a greeny, neutrally sagey color. And then there's sort of a coppery golden color that's up at the 11 o'clock position. And so I have these 5 bottles of color, and I put a layer of yarn down, and I squirt each color in its place, and I smush it around and move it around and get it where they're touching so there's no white spots in the yarn. And I didn't realize until I went to the trade show myself and started selling my yarn that what I had was different than what other people were doing.
Claudia knew she'd have to see to the creation of that perfect purple somewhere a little cheaper than Northern Virginia. So she moved to business-friendly Harrisonburg. Claudia McLean bought a house with a drain in the basement floor and started a real homegrown business complete with freshly dyed yarn hanging from every possible surface.
Where do you get your color sense?
Okay, this is crazy, but I'll say it. I think I process emotions in color. I think that to me, the rightness or wrongness of a color combination is very visceral. When I'm standing there with a customer putting different things together, and you can always see when you get the right ones together, they go, oh, and it's involuntary. And you know when you've hit what's right for them. One of the things I say to people is there's the color that looks good on you, but then there's the color that you feel good wearing, and you should wear the second one. I can be very shy and quiet and withdrawn. And so this is my attempt to reach out and share some joy with the world.
Tell me about the dyes.
Initially, I would buy these dyes, and I didn't know what color they were. And so I would just put them on the yarn just to see what color they were. And they wound up being pretty. And some of those colors, like purple earth, are the colors that we have even now. And so now I have like these 150 different colors that we've named, you know, like eat your veggies or walk in the woods.
I have to tell you, I was on the phone with a yarn shop in Charlottesville and your name came up and they said, I think that's our best selling yarn. How do you sell? But what's been your learning curve on the marketing end of this?
Oh, okay, so I do not have a knitting shop. We have a wholesale business. And this is my shy hermit, I don't want to talk to people side of me that says, well, I'll only have to go to 2 trade shows a year, and I can handle that. I'll just go and pretend like it's not really me in the booth having to talk to people about yarn. And then the economy did what the economy did, and I had to get on the road and start selling yarn. And so I would go and work a trade show with one of my knitting shops. And that's what I've been doing and going. And, you know, we've survived this economy. But I think I had to change. I had to be open to suggestions. And because people want to meet Claudia.
Of course, because your name is on the yarn.
You know, people want to know, where did this come from? What's the story? It just makes them very happy.
Okay, look in your crystal ball. What is the future of Claudia's hand-painted yarns? Are you going to, do you want to own the world? Do you want to stay small? What do you want to do?
You know, we always want to make more money, but there's a balance that works, that's about quality of life and being able to be present in my life. You know, it's like, no, I thought for a while I wanted to own the world. I wanted to have this big, huge yarn company, and I really don't. We have, and because I've been out on the road and meeting the end users, the people who actually knit with my yarn, they feel free to pick up the phone and call us if they're having problems with a knitting pattern. You know, they'll call and I'll go, okay, let's just do this. You know, and it's fun. It's a real connected thing, yet I've got enough distance that I can manage it in my crazy hermit life. It's just perfect.
I'm gonna knit. Knit, knit all day. I'm gonna knit my blues away. Well, if I'm feeling low, I knit a row.
By the way, Claudia McLean says she's still a manic knitter. Pictures and a link to Claudia's hand-painted yarns are on the Spark page at WMRA.org.
I'm Chanel Verani, and this is Our Island Universe.
Spring arrives in the Northern Hemisphere on Sunday, March 20th. Along with the renewal of trees, plants, and the arrival of spring flowers, it also means Easter will soon be here. In fact, the dates of many Christian holidays depend on the date of Easter, which in turn depends on the date of the vernal equinox. Wait, how is the date of Easter connected to the spring equinox? According to the Bible, Jesus' death and resurrection occurred around the time of the Jewish Passover. In 325, the Council of Nicaea established that Easter would be held on the first Sunday after the first full moon, occurring on or after the vernal equinox. But problems with the Julian calendar in use at the time meant that the date of the spring equinox, and hence Easter, was moving. And with it, all of the other important dates related to it. With the introduction of the Gregorian calendar, Easter now falls on a Sunday between March 22nd to April 25th. Of course, not all Christian churches observe Easter according to the Gregorian calendar. Some churches still observe Easter under the Julian calendar, which means Easter can be as late as May 10th. This year, with the spring equinox arriving on March 20th and the full moon falling on Wednesday, March 23rd, it means Easter Sunday will fall on March 27th. Wow. Who's ready for some chocolate? I am Chanel Varani, director of the John C. Wells Planetarium at James Madison University.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Eugene Stoltzwiss Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, the Just Pax Fund, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about our News and Information Fund, just go to our website, WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. But of course, this week we're also asking you to click the Support Now button on WMRA.org. We are wrapping up our More News, Less Noise Spring Fund Drive. Tuesday is the deadline to meet our goal. So please do employ the website and make your contribution now at WMRA.org. And thanks. You'll find all of our stories from the newsroom there. Be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio. And you can follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicki, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.